Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Was it the Sun what won it? The referendum, that is, for Britain to leave the EU. That's the question we'll be asking on this week's Journalism Matters podcast. Not just the Sun, but also the Daily Mail, Telegraph titles and the Express titles. So all these papers were strongly biased in the final month of the referendum campaign, reflecting a pro-Brexit viewpoint, not just in their leader columns, but also in their editorial pages too. To talk about this, I've got The Sun's associate editor, Trevor Kavanagh, who's a political columnist for the paper, a former political editor, who's been with The Sun for 40 years. And to look also at this issue, I've got Evan Harris, the former Lib Dem MP and an executive director of the campaign group Hacked Off. First up, Trevor Kavanagh.
What your thoughts were, really, the extent to which, so I suppose you can speak for The Sun, you know, the Sun was sort of leading, or the extent to which it was really reflecting and resonating what it was hearing, you know, and what it thought that its readers were worried about.
Yes, I think that it's the latter of the two, because we have had a view on the European Union and its grand design for a very long time, and throughout that period, 30 or 40 years, that has been matched by and led by, indeed in many cases, by our readership, which has been 2-1 a sceptical compared with a Europhile sort of audience about, and that includes everything from the origins of the single currency, the exchange rate mechanism, right through the moves towards ever closer union and the Maastricht Treaty, and then the Constitution and the Lisbon Treaty that supplanted that. That feeling by our readership has actually grown, if anything, over the years, and we would have been remiss not to represent it. I've had calls from papers in Europe about this editorialising, which they regard as rather strange, and it is probably, perhaps at any rate, unique to Britain that newspapers take a particular stance on a political issue, but it's not new. It's always been the case, I think. We have a very diversified press, which is not the case in all other countries. We have people, we have papers on the left and on the right, and allegedly on the independent centre ground too. And all of them express their views, not least of which would be, for instance, the Financial Times, which has been vehemently pro-European for at least the last 20 years, and has made no secret of the fact that it is partisan. And indeed has lost a lot of credibility in the city because it has presented only one side, the Project Fear argument, throughout the campaign.
Yeah, that's interesting. Well, I suppose following on from that, I mean, what's your sense of the extent to which the press, I guess, sort of Fleet Street, may have had an influence on the result, going one way or the other?
Well, I think that there have been in academic attempts to research this. And as you will know, after the 1997 election, after in fact the 1992 election, in which we, well, in the eyes of some, infamously said that somewhat won it, that was possibly an emotional spasm of relief, actually, rather than a claim of actual impact, because Martin Linford, who subsequently, he was a former Guardian journalist who became an academic and then an MP, a Labour MP, carried out a research on it and said that basically it was 50-50, almost an inconsequential impact of newspapers on readers, because most readers form an opinion well in advance of an event, whether it's an election or a referendum. And I think that there are some variations, obviously, and we don't know to what extent, but I think, if anything, it was the Remain camp and Project Fear which influenced people more than the Brexit campaign. And I suspect that had the Remain camp delivered a more upbeat and sunny view of what life was like, arguing the benefits of being remaining in the European Union, they would have done better. But on the other hand, Project Fear certainly, as Kelvin McKenzie has admitted, caused buyer's remorse after. A lot of people wonder whether they'd done the right thing. I don't know, frankly, which is which. There will have been a lot of people who worried about their mortgages and their and inflation and the national debt and the possibility of a horrendous budget. But, you know, events have proven that they were not justified. We haven't had an emergency budget. We won't have an emergency budget. Inflation isn't going to soar. And the stock market has actually bounced back to record highs.
And just on the, you mentioned the FT, and I don't know, it struck me that the sort of pro-Leave papers were a lot more strident in their support of the Leave argument, and perhaps that's why they won the argument, because the pro-Remain papers seemed rather kind of limp-hearted about it, and only really coming to a view quite near the end. I don't know.
I absolutely disagree with that point of view. I think that the reason that the Brexit arguments resonated was because they had justification in them. And I think the reason that the Remain arguments failed was because they were, as you say, limp. And basically was hanging on to the fear of something worse. The arguments for striking out on our own were cast by the Remain camp as Little England xenophobia. But it's not true, because as you will see, what we were saying out loud, and because we'd had the opportunity to put it into a referendum argument, was exactly the same, if not more restrained in many ways, as the views across the channel in countries like France, Germany, Italy, and the southern states, where they've actually been on the receiving end of the policies which the Remain camp thought were so wonderful, but which those who had been on the receiving end of the euro had found extremely punishing. And it didn't take much, surely, to say you only have to look at the euro and its consequences to see that the European Union grand project is in fact a flawed enterprise. And it isn't necessarily wholly going in the right direction. It is perhaps arguably going in wholly the wrong direction. And so when you have a Pew Research Studies opinion poll showing more than 60% in France of all countries wishing they could follow us into a referendum and vote out, that tells you something, doesn't it? It's not just Little England.
Well, thanks for that. And the, I suppose the just a quick one. I mean, people will do dissertations on this, and they'll tot up the number of articles which have been which appeared in papers favouring Remain, favouring Leave. And I think you probably find that in the Sun that the there wasn't it wasn't, shall we say, precisely balanced. There was probably you probably weighted the editorial coverage in favour of Leave. Rather than being scrupulously fair as a broadcaster might be. I mean, is that fair comment, and is that right? You know, should we be more Should we strive to be balanced in journalism?
No, I don't think so. Yeah. I think that newspapers should say what they think. They should reflect the views of their readers, and they should also carry through the arguments they think are the correct arguments. And I think, whichever way you look at this, Europe isn't working very well. When you've got unemployment across Europe, which is double the average rate across Europe to what Britain's rate is, something is going seriously wrong. And if you can just look at that and say, oh, look, we've got to give an even balance to that and say there are good things about unemployment, then I think you're barking up the wrong tree.
Okay, well, look, thanks for that. And sort of final question, I know you probably get asked this a lot, the extent to which this decision finally to, go out and say, right, vote leave, is Rupert Murdoch involved in those decisions, or how does it work? Or is it just down to the editor and the senior team? I mean, how does it work?
The Sun has had a stance on the European Union for the 40 years that I've been associated with it, first as political editor and then as chief leader writer and then as columnist. And we've had a view from Up Yours Delors and Ball at Gaul and so on and so on, which has been consistent, honourable, legitimate and accurate as things turned out. Yeah. It would have been wholly bizarre if at the referendum we turned around and said, oh well, maybe we should stay.
So next up, I spoke to Evan Harris, who's the executive director of Hacked Off. Has been a strong critic of the tabloid press and of The Sun in particular over a number of years.
What's your response to what Trevor Kavanagh said there? He feels that The Sun has been entirely honourable in the way it's behaved and the way it's reported this important issue. I mean, what's your take on the way that the press has covered the Brexit and aftermath?
The point from the public interest is not about balance. The press are entitled to be partisan and they're entitled to take sides, but given that they are signed up to a standards code of their own of their own creation, what they're not entitled to be according to clause one of that code is to issue publish inaccurate misleading or distorted information. And it's very clear, just looking at what happened, that several newspapers, especially on the Brexit side, in many cases on page one, or at least in splash headlines inside, published information that was clearly inaccurate and distorted and misleading. Now, no one's arguing that there should be any prior restraint in any effective system of press regulation, but what Leveson said and made clear was that there had to be adequate remedy, and that means that there needed to be prompt and equivalent prominence corrections. Now, most of those stories were not corrected at all, even though they were inaccurate, false or misleading. And those that were corrected in tiny writing on an inside page. So a fraction of the people who will have read, and presuming they believe their newspapers, have been misled on this important question in a referendum of public policy, were never disabused of what they had been told. And on the one occasion where Ipso intervened on the famous Sun's Queen Backs Brexit front page banner headline, instead of taking 10 minutes to show that there was nothing in the article that could justify the headline, which is all it would take, they took 10 weeks to require The Sun only to print nothing on the front page, no correction at all, but a small print version of their adjudication on page two. That meant, I would say, probably 1% of the people who were misled by the false, found by their own regulator that the press set up and control, their own regulator found it was false, and yet 99% of the people who saw it were never disabused by The Sun, and The Sun in fact were allowed to reject the findings altogether of their own regulator. Now, I think that's a major problem if a doctor was found to breach their own standards code by the General Medical Council and came out afterwards and said they'd do it again, and did it again, like The Sun did a few weeks later, then they'd be in real trouble. But the press don't have anything other than a sham regulator, And of course, it's no coincidence that sitting on the board of this sham regulator is Trevor Cavanagh, the associate editor of The Sun, who presumably agrees with his editor that Ipso got it wrong, and shows that the whole thing is a farce.
Do you think the press coverage might have had a decisive impact on the way things are going?
It's hard to say whether accurate press coverage would have made a difference, but if newspapers like The Mail, The Star, The Express and The Sun, who have been identified, and this has never been rebutted by them, by the Infax organisation led by a senior journalist from Reuters, shown to have published over a dozen false front page or page lead stories that created, which were effectively lies because I think they knew they were false, then that could have had an effect. Now, with a free press, it's impossible to complain as strongly if accurate stories, which are biased in the sense that they only put one side in their newspaper, influence their readers and the electorate. But one can legitimately complain if the press fail to follow their own standards code, their useless sham regulator fails to do anything about it, and millions of people were misled by inaccurate stories, stories known to be inaccurate, that were distorted or misleading, basically propaganda printed in the newspapers. The newspapers can't have it both ways. They can't say they're entitled to present to their readers their view, when at the same time, in cases, that view is misleading, distorted, or inaccurate, breaching their own code. That's the problem they face, and unfortunately, the people responsible for this in senior positions are never held to account by interviewers or by their own so-called regulator, which is, of course, a sham.
Okay, so that concludes this week's Journalism Matters podcast. Look out for the next edition in 2 weeks' time.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.